Simulation-led training stems from the challenge of achieving widespread skill transfer to career seekers, employees, without incurring the high financial and resource cost, including the risks associated with it. So with that in mind, you know, when we use a simulation as a training environment, we're just allowing the trainees to be able to experiment with processes and tasks that are difficult or somewhat impossible to replicate in real world.
Artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality. These words probably conjure up visions of avatars floating in the metaverse or space age scenes. But did you know this technology is also helping to train people for tasks very much rooted in the real world? And these skills can help create opportunities and bring about positive social change.
Chainsaws are powerful and highly dangerous tools. Many growers are reluctant to allow inexperienced trainees into their plantations for the practical component of chainsaw training programs due to the safety concerns. FSA, with industry partners, has developed a virtual reality training application for chainsaw operators, a world first. The app provides training service providers with a cost-effective tool to make chainsaw training more accessible and safer. The app bridges the gap between the training room and the actual plantation by creating a virtual forest within which the trainee can learn and practice the correct chainsaw operating techniques and procedures in a safe environment while being watched over by an expert trainer.
We've just heard about an app developed by Forestry South Africa to train chainsaw operators in a safe, simulated environment before using a real power tool on a tree. This kind of approach to harness tech for skills development while reducing danger and boosting productivity is increasingly being used in everything from welding and carpentry to firefighting. Just as virtual reality allows these artisans to rehearse their movements and responses without real-life risks, it can do the same thing for the softer skills too. VR can create realistic scenarios to practice communication, public speaking, customer service, or conflict resolution.
When you're in a group, you don't want to expose yourself. You don't want to expose your biases. You don't want to expose your blind spots. And that can be something that's very difficult to talk about. In the virtual reality setting, that inhibition is often removed.
I think sometimes we default to the safety of saying nothing versus, you know, putting yourself out there and saying something.
In a PricewaterhouseCoopers study of VR designed for soft skills training, the results showed that VR learners were 4 times faster to train than in a classroom, almost 3 times more confident to apply their new skills, and almost 4 times more emotionally connected to the content than classroom learners. In countries with large skills gaps, this kind of technology could bring opportunities for growth in almost every sector. Welcome to Season 4 of the Just for a Change podcast, powered by the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Ntombini Marengani. In this season, we're looking at unexpected connections, surprising overlaps, and unusual alignments in the work being done locally and globally that's moving our societies forward in positive ways. Just a reminder that the views shared by our guests may not necessarily reflect the views of the Bertha Center. As a refresher on the acronyms we use in this episode, virtual reality, or VR, creates virtual worlds that you can move around in. VR relies on specialized headsets and software to achieve this illusion. Augmented reality, or AR, overlays digital elements onto the real world. Think furniture virtually placed in your living room or applying a filter to a photo on your phone. And finally, artificial intelligence, or AI, refers to the intelligence demonstrated by machines, often achieved through algorithms and machine learning. It's way more than just ChatGPT, and you've already been using it for years in your banking app, music streaming platforms, and map service. VR and AR provide a stage, and AI helps to bring the virtual world to life. All of these technologies together are grouped under the term extended reality, or XR. In this episode, we'll speak to Teboho Mokwele, an alumnus of the eTrack program for high-impact entrepreneurs launched by the UCT Graduate School of Business's Solution Space. Teboho will share more about how immersive training environments can help companies to transform and build a more inclusive society. But first, let's hear from Dr. Jason van Staden.
Hi everyone, my name is Jason van Staden.
Jason is a project manager of research and training in the Bertha Center's Innovative Finance portfolio. He completed his doctorate in business and management at Wits University, where he also lectured and did a postdoctoral research fellowship. Jason has founded two tech-based startups, hoping to use his skills, knowledge, and experience in research, technology, and finance to bring impactful social change. I asked Jason to tell us more about innovative finance in South Africa and XR's role in this kind of solution that can bring about much-needed social change.
Emerging technologies have paved the way for greater accessibility and opportunities for learning for underserved communities in Africa. For example, AI can be used to better assess credit scores and financial risk. Nkopa, an asset financing platform for the underbanked, uses AI to manage lending risk and financial forecasting. The use of AI has helped improve its customers' repayment performance and allowed them to extend further credit. Using AI interventions to improve risk assessment allows for the underbanked customers with little credit history to potentially access finance. VR and AR can also be used to improve financial literacy through richer and more engaged learning opportunities. Emerging technologies provide incredible opportunity to unlock finance to drive positive social change in Africa. It is important we strive to create an enabling environment to adopt these technologies to experience its full potential.
It's fascinating to hear about the possibilities that advanced tech can bring, provided we have the financial tools and support to back it up. To tell us more about how immersive technologies are transforming the business world in South Africa, I'd like to welcome Teboho Mokwele. Teboho is the founder of Monobyte Group. This venture acceleration and capacity building program is for high impact entrepreneurs in South Africa and beyond. Teboho certainly fits this bill, with his work in solving skills gaps in the workplace using advanced technologies and XR. Thank you so much for joining me today, Teboho. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Ntombi. It is also a pleasure to be joining you this morning.
Please tell me more about your work as a high-impact entrepreneur. What has your experience been like so far?
My experience as an entrepreneur has been challenging, inspiring, and deeply satisfying at the same time. Just to provide a bit of context, the challenging part of it comes from, you know, having to explain the technology that we use to the audience or to users that have not been exposed to it before. So we obviously start by ensuring that we educate the users on the technology first before we can demonstrate its uses and potential benefits to them. But most importantly, the satisfying aspect of it comes from witnessing the behavioral change from the users when they start to realize and get the benefits of adopting these technologies. So just that seeing that behavioral change and the satisfaction from their faces becomes, brings a sense of joy to us.
Take us back to the beginning. How did the idea of Monobyte come about?
This idea came like a long time ago. The origin of it, before it was Monobyte, many, many years ago, I was in high school, I was a student, and at the time I thought I wanted to explore a career as a chartered accountant, mainly because some of my strength is maths and accounting and economics and so forth. So one day I went to one of the big four firms, trying to get an understanding of a day-to-day reality of being a CA, and I realized then that was not aligned with my expectations of a satisfying job. And that experience was further solidified when I went to varsity pursuing, you know, become accounting. And it became clear that what I thought the career entailed is not entirely what it is in reality. But then, of course, there was no other way of knowing until you actually can do it back in the days. And then that made me start to ask myself certain questions, such as trying to find a way in which I could explore various careers before making any commitments in terms of registering for a course or you know, taking up a job. And at the time, my research could not yield me any positive results. So there's nothing that I could find at that time except websites. And then, you know, since then, I just obviously started to ask myself, how come we don't have things that can allow, you know, students, career seekers to spend a day or two in the shoes of a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, whatever the case may be, before one can make a choice. And through that, there was a lot of research that I was making at the time. That research led to an adaptation of various solutions, which led to where we are now. My first venture was using animation, where we're trying to animate, you know, office-based training scenarios. And then there were some successes there. And there was just one thing missing in terms of putting the user in the shoes of that particular, you know, profession. And through research and understanding the changes in technologies, then, you know, eventually we got to where we are now.
Monobike combines realistic simulations, interactive experiences, and AI-driven feedback for skills development. Why is this kind of training needed?
The training or the simulation-led training stems from the challenge of achieving widespread skill transfer to career seekers, employees, without incurring the high financial and resource cost, including the risks associated with it. So with that in mind, you know, when we use a simulation as a training environment, we're just allowing the trainees to be able to experiment with processes and tasks that are difficult or somewhat impossible to replicate in real world. Now, lately, with the, you know, the enhancements we've seen in the AI space, we're able to even integrate the two-way communication between the trainee and the virtual environment, as well as enable an immediate feedback loop. You know, typically when you go to a training, they train you, you write an assessment at some point, other parts will fail. And it will be nice for me to know, as I'm learning, where am I lacking, so that I can fix that immediately as I'm learning and become better at it, instead of waiting for the exam date and only, you know, get my results then. So this type of training enables all of that and many other benefits.
How did you go from cartoons to VR? What was missing with the cartoons? You said there wasn't the two-way communication, but how immersive is it?
The difference between using animation and the immersion is that when you're using immersive experience, you're enabling the user to physically be in the shoes of that particular character that you're playing. In this case, since we're speaking about the careers, instead of watching the animation of a doctor performing an experiment, for example, then you put on the VR gear and then you yourself, you are in the shoes of a doctor and you're the one that is performing the operation if it's an operation. You know, so that's the, you know, the shift from why we moved from the animation to the more of immersion, because now we were trying to solve the issue of a person watching a video tutorial, and instead of watching, we'd rather have you perform the job. You know, you learn better when you do the things instead of just watching. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, but also it's a bit scary, because to think that someone who has just completed school wants to know what it's like to be a physician or wants to know what it's like to be a chemist, and then suddenly they have the access and the power within this VR environment to actually try and do things, it must be quite an experience.
Yeah, well, indeed it is. Luckily, we have various modes. There's a learning mode where it assumes that the user does not have the theoretical background in that subject matter. And then you have the assessment mode where you would have done some things in those in that profession prior. And then now you want to assess your skills if you can do it. And there's a collaboration mode. There's quite a number of modes that the user can learn or can use, rather. The idea as a high school learner, it will be to take you through the life of a doctor, if you want to be a doctor, of course, or any profession, but without exposing you to the detailed intricacies of it, because you may not be able to to have the context to understand in the first place. What us, as a university student, the exposure which we'll get will be completely different from a high school person, because now you're studying medicine, you're in your second or third year, and then you now have a bit of an understanding. So what this does is, sure, you can still use a real human being for the purpose of what you need to do, but if you want to go further than that, then you now can use VR to explore all the tissues inside the hand without cutting anyone, and get more in-depth understanding on how do the veins and the bones and the whatever that is inside connected together and how do they work. So it really depends on what you are, where you are currently, and what your goal is.
At what point did you realize that you needed to have different tiers of training within your simulations?
Before starting all of the work we do with Monobite, I was once employed as a program coordinator at a university here in the Western Cape. And during that period, I've learned a lot in terms of skills transfer, especially digital skills transfer, where one has to take into account, who are you training or who is the course supposed to be tailored to, what are the goals, the benefits, and how you're going to measure success. And in so doing, at the time, we're training from first-year students right through to post-grad students in terms of the programs that I was managing or coordinating. Its focus was more on taking, traditional learning and take it to the digital environment. So there's a lot of lessons that I've learned during that time. And then, of course, in addition to that, when you're developing any solution, you always have to put yourself in the shoes of a user. And you ask yourself, what if this, what if that, what if analysis. So taking all of these things into account, and just like a general approach in terms of when you're building any solution, that you have to be more user-centric. It was quite clear that it has to be designed in layers in terms of assuming different backgrounds of the users. Someone who doesn't know how to use VR at all, someone who's in high school, someone who's just, and not interested in anything. They just want to see what's happening. Someone who is already in the working environment, working for a corporate or wherever they might be working. And also, I needed to know the limitations. What can I not do with VR at this stage? Taking all of these things into account, it was then, easy for us to draw a user mapping process and have various solutions for different users.
How is this similar to real-world internships and training, and how is it different?
Some of the similarities come from the fact that, when you're doing a real-world internship and internship, you do have some element of practical experience. The users are exposed to, the ability to apply theory in a practical manner, following processes, or rather converting theories into practical scenarios where you performing a task. And the second one, there is an element of skill development where one can come with a certain level of skill set and the tool can enhance it in the same way as you would if you were in the real world learnership or internship. And in terms of the differences with XR or VR training, obviously you are in the virtual environment, not the physical one. So the environment differences, are notable to some extent, in a sense that when you're in the real world, there are certain things that, could come up that one could not have planned for. Whereas in the virtual environment, everything is sort of pre-designed. There are no areas of, surprises, so to speak.
Are there any pitfalls to XR training? Don't we lose the human element?
Yes, indeed, there are pitfalls. There's quite a number of them. The first one, like you said, is the one that pertains to the reduction in the human element, where, the technology can isolate you because you are now in your own world. Yes, there are other virtual participants also, but our mind can only be, for the lack of a better word, fooled to a certain extent. At some point, the mind will always know that this is not entirely real. The person I'm looking at is not a real human being. It's a digital human being. But I think those are some of the pitfalls that are common.
Which sectors are using XR training the most at the moment, and which sectors are not, but could really benefit from it?
So we've seen great developments in the mining and energy space, where they're using XR training to simulate the training of their workers to prepare for dangerous environments that otherwise they would have not been able to replicate in the real world. In healthcare, as I've mentioned earlier, that, you know, when you are training someone how to perform a diagnosis or do whatever it is, you're better off using a digital person than a real human being so that you don't harm other people while you are trying to train someone else. And in terms of the sectors where we have not seen it being adopted, or at least not fully, is agriculture. There is some, but limited use in the tourism and hospitality space. In retail, you know, when you go to a store, there's a fitting room you go into, you put on the clothes, you try them out. So you can use your mobile device, AR or augmented reality, to try whatever item of clothing while you're at home without going to the shop itself. So there has been some use cases in that space, but I've never seen them being widely used in a retail space. So just some of those that I could see, I could think of top of my head.
Do you have any results or stories that you can share with us where this has really worked well in South Africa?
Well, yes, I can start with our own story, our own result. So we work with a number of other organizations, NGOs, private companies, some government sectors and so forth. So we've partnered with one of the NGOs where we were collaborating on delivering a project with the MICT CETA. The learners were doing a system support, simply mean that they learn the theories on how to fix computers, connect the network and the servers and so forth. And then they typically get assessed, and then they go into their practicals, and then that's normally where the line ends. So our involvement there was to, after they do their theoretical training, we then take them to the virtual environment where they put on the VR headset. Instead of just learning theoretically on how to pull a network, they can digitally set it up and test it and see if it works. So there has been a number of successes of our own, as well as obviously some that we've seen externally.
It sounds like this technology represents a quantum leap in skills acquisition. And I'm wondering, what is the opportunity for this in developing countries like South Africa with our high unemployment rates and big skills gap? Is this kind of tech accessible?
I think for a country like South Africa, it is much more relevant in a sense that we have the high unemployment rate, like you said, we have a skills gap and so forth. So when we're trying to close that skill gap, especially between certain socioeconomic groups, you would want to allow the trainees, the learners, the students to have sort of exposure to similar type of tools. There are certain schools where, you know, they don't really have infrastructure to perform, let's take science, for example, certain scientific experiments, because the infrastructure is just not there. And then using tools like this can close that gap whereby whether your school have a real lab or not, we can still have the learners being exposed to how to perform those scientific things. You know, using tools like this enable people to just, or job seekers, to acquire skills much faster. And I think lastly, we can use it for skills transfer. If I don't know how to make a table, for example, and I would like to pursue that career or that, whether it's a career or it's a training or course, I could do that without having to, you know, to use real resources, wood and all the equipment that is required. So from that perspective, I think it can help us to close that gap, both from training and skill transfer point of view.
What do you think the risk is for us as a country if we don't embrace this kind of technology?
The first one is the widening skills gap. We're always going to rely on getting people getting employed first before they can get the skills. So the skill gap will keep growing, I would imagine. And then, of course, there is that aspect of lost economic opportunity, which, you know, each time there's a new technology, there's two things that happens. Number one, we need the people that can, you know, grow and develop and sort of implement the technology itself. With any new technology, that we tend to see the creation of new jobs or new roles, enhancement of existing roles, you know. So So that is a potential loss that we could be suffering. There is innovation stagnation. I mean, we don't really want to be the country that is stuck with, 100-year-old technologies that, and that our counterparts have progressed to other things or to other new refined tools and technologies. So we'd want to be able to have innovation or foster innovation within our country that typically also enables startups and other small businesses to want to enter the market.
How do you think this kind of technology helps to alleviate social inequities?
I think at first, it provides an equal playground for communities, whether I'm in a rural community or I'm in the urban community. It provides that equal landscape for us to be able to, participate from, whether it's through education, it's through career guidance. So this type of technologies provide a sort of an equal foundation and ground for everyone to be able to participate in the economy, no matter where you are, no matter, your background and so forth. We all have the same chance.
And what role does collaboration play in your work? And are there any unique partnerships that have come up that you perhaps didn't anticipate when you started?
Collaboration in this space is key. We got to where we are now, and I think we still have a number of milestones to achieve because of the collaboration we have with, the government agencies, with the NGOs, local NGOs, and NPCs, with the likes of the solution space, the GSV, as well as some tech giants that are helping us, like Microsoft and AWS, that give us the, enterprise-grade infrastructure from which we build our solutions on and be able to scale it across the continent and beyond.
You've given us a lot of examples of how XR benefits the user or the trainee, as it were. But can you explain to us how XR might help with talent acquisition and improve companies' BEE ratings?
So I'm glad you asked that because our business model targets companies that wants to increase their triple BEE rating. And how that typically works, for talent acquisition or increasing the rating and so forth, is often companies have their corporate and social responsibility budget that is geared towards things like job curation, education, skill development, and so forth. And when the companies take on projects or fund projects from that point of view, projects that are uplifting education in the communities, projects that have some socioeconomic benefits, within that space. So when companies approach it from that point of view, we're able to still use the same tool to align it to their CSR goals. And additionally, we have accreditation, meaning our solutions have a QCTO component where we've aligned to the QCTO because we understand that we can't just provide random training and then expect miracles to happen. It still has to have or meet certain quality standards, so to speak. And as far as talent acquisition is concerned, we have tools that helps the learners or the career seekers rather, number one, to explore career opportunities at a whole lot of corporates, which is accessible through their mobile device. They don't have to buy the VR gear. And the tool will have an interview preparation, if you may, like a mock interview to help you prepare sufficiently for the real interview. It also helps the companies to not only assess someone by the high school grades or whatever other measures, but to give you a virtual opportunity to perform tasks and complete them and show them that you can do the job that you're applying for. Sometimes you find that career seekers may be limited due to communication. They might struggle to explain themselves quite well, even though they can do the job. Also consider skills holistically. The person may not have went to a great university, but perhaps they have acquired the skill on how to do whatever the task requires outside of the university environment.
It sounds like you've had an incredible journey building this business. What have been some of the highlights of your journey in this space?
For me, depending on, you know, obviously, like how we look at it, the first one was to have that project or contract where we're delivering concurrently for a multinational telecoms company across four provinces. It helps us to learn how to scale quickly. In addition to that, we've had the opportunity to get our materials, or some of them at least, to go through QCTO process where, well, we can deliver training solutions which will culminate in a learner receiving an accredited national certificate or higher certificate depending on the course itself. So which then helps us to work closely with the corporates that are driving, you know, or aiming to achieve the triple BE points, like you've mentioned earlier. And we've also have experimented solution within the MRCET where learners are, they learn theoretical aspect and now give them the opportunities to apply the skill in the learnership. And then, of course, we've won a number of competitions and that led to us getting partnerships with the likes of Microsoft, AWS, Meta, or Facebook. And the list of those partners goes on. Even today, we still have strong partnerships that are supporting us to, you know, be able to, you know, sustain our operations.
I'm sure you've also faced some steep learning curves. Can you give us an example of a significant challenge and how you've overcome it?
The number one challenge that we have experienced so far is our own talent acquisition. For us to get good engineers and other resources that we need to help us build what we're building, it has been a bit of a challenge in the sense that we find that, you know, we're looking for someone that has a certain combination of skill sets, technical skill set, that can help us build the solutions. And the limitation there is sometimes, you know, people have one of the two. They can code, they can, you know, do computer science coding and so forth. But when it comes to translating into XR development or creation, you know, we're struggling to find the right fit because the work that we do, sometimes we experiment first and see if it works before we can go and not get a possible client's job. So if we're not aligned in terms of our values, in terms of our beliefs, you know, things like that, it becomes then difficult to work with just anyone.
Debojo, now I'd like to ask you a question that we're asking all of our guests this season, and that is, why do you do the work you do and what makes you hopeful?
I enjoy solving problems that have potential of benefiting society at large, so overall. And, you know, with the emergence of technologies like AI and VR, and AR and so forth, you know, it just makes this process much more impactful and scalable. Like it's much more, we can do it at a larger scale, so to speak. And that fuels my optimism for the future in terms of with all these technologies coming, I'm sure there's a whole lot more that we could do for the upcoming years.
And what does social innovation mean to you?
Social innovation to me means, you know, I suppose curating or developing creative solutions that addresses society's most pressing challenges. And doing so by, I suppose, stepping beyond the traditional boundaries and methodologies of creating such impactful and sustainable solutions. But I think most importantly, it involves a whole lot of changing the systems and practices that would culminate in the improvement of lives for the long-term goals that, you know, could benefit the society and communities at large.
Thank you so much, Tibokho, for sharing up your story with us and for letting us learn more about cutting-edge technology with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having the chat through the podcast, and we'll be looking forward to chatting again in the future.
In this episode, we've seen how VR and AI are not just about fantastical futurescapes. They're powerful tools with the potential to revolutionize training and development, bridge skills gaps, and empower workforces on the ground. The future of immersive training is bright, and with continued innovation, collaboration, and financial support, it could really change society for the better. Thank you for tuning in to Season 4 of the Just for a Change podcast, powered by the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. If you're interested in hearing more about unexpected connections, then make sure you subscribe to this podcast so that you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcasts, and feel free to share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. Let's stay inspired and keep changing the way we're changing the world. This podcast is produced by Two Stories in collaboration with the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship at the Graduate School of Business at the University of Cape Town. Written by Linda Scarborough, produced by Carol Williams, with audio editing, engineering, and sound design by Kosim Zimela and Duduzile Masuku, with production assistance from Without a Doubt Agency. Special thanks to the Bertha Center team and the Bertha Foundation for their input on this series. For more information on resources used to create this episode, please refer to the show notes.